Hi everyone, this is the Bad Apples. This is episode three. It's episode three times three. It's episode nine of season three, and this is a live episode, a live recording. It's not straight from Ohio Linux Fest. It is actually straight from a different East Coast town. I'm kind of hanging out here, visiting some friends on the good old East Coast, where I actually sort of call home. The reason I'm doing this live is because I don't have editing gear with me, really, and you'll kind of see why. So this is going to be the Ohio Linux Fest, you know, wrap-up episode, I guess, and I'm going to stumble on through it, and if I make too many mistakes, we'll just have to deal with it. I don't even have coffee on me, because I don't really have a coffee maker in this particular hotel room. And the cafe downstairs, well, I just came from there and drank a lot of coffee, so if I went back down and got more, I'd be in trouble. So instead, I'm going to be drinking Country Time lemonade, which I actually stole from one of the parties at OLF and stuck into my bag for later. So I'm going to be enjoying it right now. And it's quite good, Country Time lemonade. In a can, non-alcoholic, of course. So that's what I'm doing. This episode, I'm going to be talking about Ohio Linux Fest, how it went, who I met, what happened, my thoughts, all that other good stuff. I'm going to read some listener feedback, and I will be doing a sort of review, or an overview anyway, of Triple E Debian. Okay, so at OLF, I had kind of intended to get some interviews, kind of take the old Nokia around, you know, talk to people, stuff like that. Well, it kind of turned out that, I mean, there were so many podcasters at OLF, so many people around who I just knew were going to be interviewing other people. I felt like I'd probably end up repeating material that someone else was going to cover. Whether that's right or wrong, I don't know. But I was also kind of just, I don't know, I was really there to meet other podcasters. I mean, that was my primary goal of going to OLF. So I kind of just, I did that instead of really doing the whole typical conference thing. I was really just kind of hanging out with other people. So I just took it easy, basically, is what I'm trying to say. The real stars of Ohio Linux Fest, in my mind, you know, for me anyway, was were the Tilts guys. The Linux Link Tech Show, I mean, really, it's like Tilts plus OLF equals OLFTS. You know, it's the Ohio Linux Fest Tech Show, because they had their booth there. They had a great audio setup. They were using Linux to record and stream everything. I mean, not that I need to tell you that, just as a comparison to, you know, other people who might have been streaming at the same festival. It was all Linux, nothing else being used there. And, you know, it was just, they were professional and they were friendly. They came across to me like they were from a local radio station or something, you know. I mean, it was neat. And they had, you know, they had the obligatory booth babes there. No, actually, that wasn't a booth babe. That was Dan, actually. Sorry. But, you know, they had a lot of cool things going on. They had raffle. So, I mean, they were popular anyway among the people who were listening to them. You know, lots of people were there hanging around the booth, me being one of them. I would always stop by when I was, you know, passing by, or just hang out and chat with them. But they were always having, you know, the raffle items they had set up on their table attracted a pretty good crowd, and they did have a raffle at the end of the day, and that was really popular. So they probably gained, you know, some listeners. And man, Pat and Dan, those were the two that I saw. They were going crazy with the interviews. They were just interviewing all kinds of people. So you might have even heard some of this live, because they were streaming live during the whole festival. I mean, that was just really cool. And they also, they've now posted a lot of those, or all those interviews online as, like, you know, two extra episodes, part one and part two. So you can check those interviews out. I was interviewed by them. I was really excited to be, you know, officially on Tilt. So that was pretty cool. Just because, you know, I mean, they've got such a good show. It's so informative. And they kind of knew what I knew about. So they were, you know, they were obviously sure to ask me about the questions that I would have intelligent answers to. And I, if memory serves, we had a really good conversation. I haven't listened to it yet. But if you check it out, you know, give it a listen. And if my memory serves, it, we talked a lot about, like, video and graphic stuff on Linux. So, you know, me and Pat and Dan, I guess we all kind of know about that kind of stuff. And so it was a pretty good, I felt it was a pretty good conversation about that. And I'll mention a little bit more about Blender in a moment. You know what, I'll mention it right now. So we were talking a lot about Blender because in my past, you know, two or three episodes, I did the Blender tutorial. Well, there was a guy there whose name I sort of could recall if I could just dig out his business card. Here it is. Animating Roland Hess. Roland Hess. He is an animator and an author. He wrote a book on for Focal Press, at least, on, you know, how to use Blender. And I'm going to definitely check this book out, or buy the book is what I'm trying to say, because I'm very interested in that kind of thing. I really don't know nothing about no animating, but I am very interested in learning it. So I'm going to check that out. But he also, it turned out that he also, I guess he had contributed some code to the video editor portion of Blender, which, again, you know, not a lot of people even know it exists. So it was really neat to find out that he contributed to it and that he knew what he was talking about and that he was into it. So I referred him to my tutorial just so he could look at it, and just told him that I was really into the video editing portion of it. And he was talking to me, and I was talking to Dan, and Dan was talking to me about the idea of taking the video editing portion of Blender and taking that chunk of code that is that functionality. And again, I'm not a programmer, so I don't really know what I'm talking about here. But you take that code, copy and paste it into a different, you know, document, and you just rewrite maybe the GUI and maybe add a little bit of functionality to it so that when you open it up, voila, it looks like a traditional video editing application. It doesn't have all the extra really cool 3D stuff or the compositing stuff, but it's got the really functional and really good video editing components to it. Now, that to me would really work out. And I wasn't sure about that idea, and I was talking to Dan about it at one point. He and I were kind of agreeing about that idea, and then Roland was saying that that was actually quite possible. And he even showed me this cool debug function on Blender that you can change, like, this number. It's RT, which I think is real-time debugging or something like that. You change that to, like, 1 or something, and then you can move the buttons around on the interface. They don't stay that way, but if it's in terms of making a mock-up of what you think it would look like, it's kind of a cool feature. So I'm probably going to be doing some GIMP mock-ups of like Blender as if though it were a video linear editor, a non-linear video editor, just because I think that's a great idea. And once again, and I know I've probably said it already in the past couple episodes, but if we want multimedia creation ability on Linux, our best bet for visuals is Blender. It's hands down no, in my opinion, it's just no comparison. It's where it needs to be. It's getting even better. It's just a great program. We should really, I think that, like, if certainly, you know, as I learn programming slowly but surely, one of the projects that I would, that I'm aiming to be able to contribute toward is Blender. The other being KDE, of course. But, you know, I mean, go for Blender, because I think that's a really, that's one of those projects that is far enough along and strong enough that you know, we keep supporting it a little bit here and there, or a lot bit, then eventually I think it's going to be, I mean, it's going to be incredible is what it's going to be. It's just going to be a great, great application. So keep an eye on that. You know, I think that the ability to go in and just make it a different application, a more specialized application, I think that's going to be, I think that's fairly close. That's the impression that I got from Roland. And I think that it's an exciting prospect. And like Roland was saying, people don't care if they download a program called, you know, Video Blender, and that is supposedly the video nonlinear editor, and really the code is almost, you know, is exactly the same. It's just a different skin or a different interface design. No one cares. That's not what's important. What's important is that it is a focused, you know, a little bit clearer video editor. Now, I'm still not talking about, you know, a basic iMovie-style editor, although I think that you could do that as well. So I think in, you know, I think you could have, we could have basically the best of all worlds with Blender. We could say, okay, well, here's Video Blender Pro, the, you know, the big video nonlinear editor for the professionals who just want to get away from Avid, want to get away from Final Cut, want to get away from Premiere, whatever. Well, really, Avid and Final Cut, let's face it. And then here's the, you know, Video Blender, you know, workshop for the people who want to do the iMovies and the Pinnacle U-Lead Studio and all this other, you know, consumer-oriented video editing. And it could all be the same code base is what I'm saying, because it's free software and we have that ability, and that's really, really cool and exciting. And frankly, I think, I really, really think that if Blender, if we transmogrified Blender into a focused video editor, I sincerely believe that we could blow Final Cut out of the water. We could blow Avid out of the water, simply because, I'm sorry if I'm repeating what I said on Tilts, but you probably haven't heard that interview, or actually you probably have. All right, well, so what I'm trying to say is that it is flexible where those proprietary systems cannot be. So that's one of the biggest advantages right there. So, plus, I mean, it's just such a powerhouse. It's just such a ridiculously powerful program. It really is. I mean, you can feel it when you're using it. You're just like, wow, I can do that. You know, it's just, it's a really great application. Wow, okay, so I like Blender. Okay. So I guess at this point, if this was going to all be edited together, we would have like a segue of music or something. Okay, there it was, right? All right, so now I would pick up from there. I would start talking about how Tilts was still just the greatest thing of OLF, because I hadn't really finished that thought. But luckily, I'm almost done with that. So all I wanted to say was that I did win a book in the raffle. Can you believe that? I never win anything, and I won a book, and I really, I don't, you know, there was nothing, I mean, it was, you know, when I won, I was like, did they fix that or something, you know, to be nice, but I don't, you know, they didn't, I saw them, they were drawing the tickets out of the box. Yeah, I won a book, and it was a really hard, I mean, they had a lot of great books up there, but I won the Linux System Administration book by O'Reilly, so that's going to be a really good read, and I was happy about that. But their booth was really fun, I have to say. They were kind of the coolest booth there, at least for me. And I don't think I'm just saying that because I like their show. I mean, I'm not that much a fanboy. I like podcasts, but I mean, come on. No, but they just had a good booth. You know, they had friendly people there. They were doing the whole raffle thing. They had lots of stuff to give away. They had a lot of people hanging around, kind of talking, and, you know, lots of opportunities to meet new people and stuff like that. Speaking of meeting new people, there were a lot of people there, you know, to meet. It was a fairly crowded conference, I think, and it was really cool to meet so many people. Obviously, the ones that, you know, you and I would care about are the people that we kind of all know, you know, the people on IRC that you might know, or people on other shows, you know. So you know, and what I should have done was every time I met someone, I should have taken out my Nokia and had them, like, introduce themselves or something, and then I could play it back or something, but I didn't think of that. And frankly, I was so unprepared for this festival. I just showed up. You know, basically, I put some bags in a back, some clothes in a backpack, grabbed my Triple E and my Nokia, and I just got on the plane and left. I didn't have business cards. I didn't have stickers. I didn't have a piece of paper or a pen. I mean, I was really not prepared for sort of the whole meet and greet kind of thing. But that's cool because I didn't really, that was not really my intention. I didn't go to, like, gain listeners or anything like that. I just went to meet people, you know, and it was fun. And, you know, it was funny because I think, like, the people that I did meet that did know who I was or had heard of me, I really got the impression that most of them had heard of me from Linux Cranks, which to me is just bizarre because I mean, that's just, like, something I do on Saturdays, you know? I mean, that's just kind of a fun show. I like to think sometimes that some people listen to this podcast and HPR and Fedora Reloaded, but everyone was like, oh, yeah, you're that Crank guy. I was like, oh, yeah, I'm one of those, I guess. But I did meet all, you know, most of the Cranks, and that was really cool. That was fun to meet them in person. You know, after a while, after you chat with them on IRC long enough, you start to think maybe they're just, you know, computers or something. You know, it really helps to meet people in person. I mean, the Cranks, it was kind of easier to meet. I mean, it was really natural to meet them face-to-face because we talk on the phone. But, like, some of the other people who you just never talk to or very rarely talk to, that was cool to meet them face-to-face because you're like, oh, you know, you're a person. Yeah, I see. Okay, cool. And there are way too many people for me to mention because I know that if I start mentioning names, I'm going to leave someone out. And so I am not going to do that. But what I will say is, well, besides, you know what? I can't even pronounce any of their names because they're all IRC handles, and none of them make any sense, and a lot of them are unpronounceable. So I'll just say, you know, to everyone, hi. I'm glad that I met you. It was really cool. It was really fun hanging out with all you guys, and you know, it was really neat to get to know you and stuff like that. So, and hopefully I was, you know, I came across as a nice person. I don't, you know, I mean, I think I was pretty nice and I tried to be as friendly as possible, but I've got two problems. And one is that it was a long festival it wasn't really long, but it was like you know, I got there really late on Thursday night, basically Friday morning, like at 1 a.m. And I didn't get much sleep. And then just the whole day, you know, it was just like this whirlwind of activity. So both days, Thursday and Friday, Friday and Saturday, were both really just kind of just crazy activity. So if I came across as being, you know, like unfriendly or mean or anything like that, really that's not how I am. Usually I'm really nice. It's just that I was probably really tired or something like that. And the other problem, number two, is that like in big groups in a social situation, I tend to do a lot less well than I do in front of a microphone doing a podcast or in front of a crowd giving a talk about something that I know about. You know, it's just like too many variables. If I'm standing in front of a crowd and they're all standing around with drinks in their hands and they're just talking about stuff, I can fall into it, but it takes me a little while to warm up sometimes. So you might have just hit me when I was still feeling, you know, like, oh, I have to think of what to say or something like that. So if I came across as being, you know, unfriendly, trust me, it's totally not, it's, you know, it wasn't you or me. It was just, you know, me. So everyone I met was really cool. All the podcasters that I met were really great. And again, I shouldn't mention them because inevitably I'm going to not mention someone. And then that's going to be, you know, they'll be angry. So, but all in all, I mean, the thing about Linux podcasters and the community, the whole Linux community in general, and this is something that I kind of observed, you know, in those social situations, like at the parties and stuff like that. And the thing is, that they're all really nice. It seems to me, at least, you know, and this could just be me, but it seems like to me, like a lot of people, a lot of us have this idea that real life is, you know, basically like high school, you know, with little cliques and niche groups who, you know, they don't like each other, they don't like the other group, or they don't like someone from outside of the group and stuff like that. But, like, actually, it's not really like that. I mean, people are just down, you know, they're cool, and they're basically, they just want to have a good time. And it doesn't matter who you are or what you look like or, you know, what your voice sounds like, whether you're a good conversationalist. It's just, you know, you show up and you're not unfriendly. You make some kind of response when spoken to. You're pretty much good to go. So that's a really neat thing. And I encourage you, if you are, you know, going to a conference or anything like that, you know, just go for it. Just be really, you know, I mean, people are really nice, and it's a really open community and stuff like that. So definitely worth kind of, you know, kind of go ahead and getting involved. Go ahead and kind of speaking up when you want to and stuff like that. So, you know, that's all. Now, the one guy I will mention is Nick, who is a guy I'd never had any contact with before. He seemed to be a friend of Russ Winner's, Russ Winner from, you know, Techie Geek and DistroWatch. Okay, now I've mentioned a podcaster, and, you know, everyone else is going to be angry because I didn't mention their name. But, so Nick, and the reason I'm mentioning him is because he actually ended up giving me a ride from Ohio out to this other place that I'm staying right now just for my vacation or whatever. And that was a lot of fun, because he had, like, a lot of really cool stories. Well, number one, I really appreciate it, because he saved me money, because I didn't have to, you know, get on a Greyhound or something and spend, you know, a whole day trying to get, you know, just from one city to the other, when the drive should be 3 hours. You know, anytime you have to deal with, you know, like Greyhound or anything like that, it turns into, like, this 9-hour affair. So that was much appreciated. And if he's listening, then I say thank you. Now, the other cool thing is that he had so many cool stories about sort of the life, the day in the life of being a system admin for big, big Unix systems. I'm talking mainframes and everything, and fascinating stories. I'm thinking about trying to get him to do an interview with me, because it really put a lot of things into perspective for me, at least. And, oh, so there would be some segue music before this, you know? So just pretend like there's segue music. Okay, so now we're on to the other segment. But yeah, it put a lot of things into perspective, because you start wondering how, or you might think, how did Linux really get so popular? And this actually helped me kind of understand how it did happen, because you had these huge, huge mainframe computers doing, well, as the personal computer evolved, these mainframes, I mean, you look at what they're doing and in certain cases, and you're just like, oh, wow, this personal computer could be doing that and so much more, and it would just be so much more reasonable, because it's going to take, what, like a 16th of the amount of power? It's not going to need to be constantly air-conditioned, you know, or not as heavily, you know. And you just throw Linux on there, and bang, it's good to go. And I think that's one of the ways that it became so popular, because basically it was a port of an OS, the OS being, you know, just generic lowercase u Unix. It was the porting of that style of OS that powered entire corporations to a small personal computer that could still power the same corporation, or it could just be a really good computing platform for you and your family and your friends or whatever. So that kind of put things into perspective for me, how Linux kind of snuck in. And I know I've heard Mad Dog kind of talk about that already. In some interview that I heard with him, he was kind of giving that kind of story. And I mean, he's right, obviously. He's totally right. That's what happened. You know, you need the power of Unix, on something a lot more reasonably sized and a lot more green, I guess, if you want to use the buzzword. So it's really neat. And yeah, I would like to get Nick on for an interview or something just to relate some of those stories, because they're really interesting stories. More Segway music. And speaking of Linux, I decided that, yes, people, this is still the same take. I have not stopped the recording yet, so this is going quite well so far, I think. So I decided that since I had acquired, so this is my review of Debian, by the way, of Triple E Debian. So I decided that since I acquired recently a computer that would sufficiently do things like video chatting and Skyping and stuff like that, that I might as well start messing around with the computer that had kind of been that solution for me previously, which was my Triple E PC. I figured worst thing I could do was totally break it, and if I did that, at least I've got this other computer to rely on if I need to do like a video conference or something like that. So I first looked into installing Slackware onto it, because I wanted to have Slackware on me more often than I do. Unfortunately, looking into how that getting installed onto a laptop or the Triple E, it's a job. There's not really an easy solution for that yet. And you know, if that's all I had to do, like if I was going to do that this week while on vacation or something, okay, that would be fine. But I didn't. I was about to leave for OLF, and I was about to, and this week I'm, you know, yes, I'm on quote vacation, but I'm busy. You know, people are hosting me and expecting me to visit with them rather than just sit around, you know, installing Slackware onto my Triple E PC. So that's not going to happen. So what I did was I finally decided, well, can't have Slackware. Let's just go for Debian, because I'm not really actively running that at the moment. I mean, I do have it on my PowerBook G4. It's running great. But, you know, I just don't use it that often. It's really a computer that I use when I'm doing, like, my Esperanto lessons, because it's got the Esperanto language on it, the keyboard set and stuff. So, and that's really, I mean, and I use it for IRC sometimes, but it's just kind of sitting there, just kind of it's just an extra box, you know. That's not really something that I carry around with me all the time. So I thought, well, you know, I'm really, my knowledge on Debian is really slipping because I'm not using it that much. So I need to get it onto something, aside from my Nokia. So, found a wiki page on Debian's site, dedicated to installing Debian onto the Triple E. It has for download, it's a tiny little boot image, takes no time to download. You just DD it over to your USB thumb drive, or I guess you could probably do it off of to an SD card or something like that. I just went USB drive. You plug it in, plug in the Ethernet cable. I think you can do it without the Ethernet cable, but I just would not recommend that personally, and I doubly wouldn't recommend it now, and you'll hear why. I boot it up. It asks you what FTP server you want to use. It gives you a list of them. You select the one that you want to use, and you start installing. And the installation goes just as normal. If you've ever installed Debian, this is it. You know, this is the same installer. You pick the group of packages. Well, you partition the disk. You pick the group of packages, and you click install. You press return, and away it goes. Okay, so the first install failed. I'm not sure why. It finished the installation process. It seemed to be okay, but for whatever reason, when I rebooted, I think the error that it gave me was that there was no kernel image found, or no system found, or no operating system found, something weird like that. Now, that was with Grub installed. I think I did Grub to the master boot record, you know, the first portion of the first hard drive, which would be the Zandros partition. I'm pretty sure that's what I did. It just didn't work. What can you do? So, I tried again. And again it appeared to work, and again it failed to boot. So again, I don't know why this is happening, but it was happening. Oh my gosh, I just figured out why it was happening. I just figured it out. I know what I did. So don't do this. You know what I did? I installed Grub on the first partition of the first hard drive. But then when I was booting the EEE, I held down the escape key, because that's what I'm used to doing. And I selected, okay, boot off the second partition, the 16 gig partition. Well, I can't do that. There's no Grub there. So that's what I did, totally. So what I was supposed to, I should have just booted, and it would have gone to Grub on the first partition, and I could have chosen which system I wanted. Wow, that is funny. Okay, cool. Podcasting is good. You really think things through. So there you go. That's what I did. User error. Totally. Okay. So, to make a longer story shorter, finally, I mean, at the time, I did not know this, so I tried it like a third time, and finally, I was like, you know what? I'm just going to wipe that first hard drive partition, because I never boot into it anyway. It's Xandros. I don't want to ever touch it. It's 4 gigabytes of space that I could be using for my system, and I'm not. So I went ahead and partitioned the first little SD card on the inside. This is an internal card, but I happen to know that there are two cards. It's a 4 gig card. I set that as the boot partition, or the root partition, and I set the 16 gig card on the inside that had formerly housed Mandriva as the /home and the /USR and stuff like that. And I should probably mention just really briefly, this was not something that I was doing to get rid of Mandriva for any reason. I had no problem with Mandriva. Mandriva was a great system. I would highly recommend it to anyone who is looking for the full triple EPC experience without Xandros, you know? And you want a real desktop. Because even the Ubuntu triple E thing, and I saw this in person on, I think both 330's triple E, and I want to say Dan's triple E. I could be wrong about that, but I did see it in person, and it looks great. The Ubuntu triple E one looks fantastic, highly impressed, really neat, but it still doesn't have like that traditional desktop, you know? It's still got that sort of tabbed interface, which looks a lot better, and it seems a lot more functional than the Xandros one, no question about that. Very well integrated. I'm down with it, right? It's not what I wanted, though. So, and I didn't want Mandriva because it was so fully featured. I was realizing I had this huge Mandriva install on my drive, and I was basically booting into Fluxbox all the time using like 3 or 4 applications, 3 of which were terminal-based, you know? So, obviously overkill, correct? Down that same path, I realized that even installing the entire Debian system was kind of a waste of effort. Plus, it wasn't booting for me at the time, and I was like, well, maybe I need to just pare this down. Although now we know it was a user error. But I figured, you know what, Debian, Mandriva, whatever, it's going to take 4 gigs of space. I don't need that. What I need is a really basic install. And so that is exactly what I did. I installed the base install. That is what it is called. It is the base install. When it came around to choosing what packages I wanted, I chose none. I did not want any packages installed. So I just did the base system, and when you boot, you reboot, it takes you to the grub, because I wasn't holding the escape key down this time, because I was like, well, now I'm booting off the first partition. So it takes you to grub, you hit enter, you get a text prompt. I mean, it's practically like being in Slackware, except that you have apt-get and... well, that's it. So it was really cool. I liked it. I love booting to a nice text prompt so that you can just get started right away, you know? That's what I like. And that's where I am a lot of times. I'm very often just kind of hanging out in a console using Vim. That's what I use a lot of. And I went ahead and installed IRSSI, of course. It's another thing I'm often using, Screen. And I'm going to try Finch, which is a cool pigeon command line backend interface that 330 told me about. So So I'm going to be installing that. Or, well, it's installed. I just haven't configured it yet. So, you know, I mean, just things like that. Things to be online and using Vim. That's literally half of what I do. The other half probably being Firefox, for which I was going to have to install X, obviously. Now, for the first couple of days, I did not bother installing X because, I didn't need it. I was not using a network. I mean, on the plane, for instance, you don't really need X, you know, to use Vim. You're not online, so you might as well just stay in the console, that's what I did. Now, the network connection to get online, for instance, not on the airplane, like once you're in the airport, you know, you want to check something. To get online, it's a little bit different than on Slackware, so I was a bit confused at first. On Slackware, of course, you would say, okay, if config ath0 up, if config ath0 ESSID, you know, name of the network that you want to join, or just say all or whatever, and then DHCPCD ath0, and now you're online. You've gotten a DHCP address, and you're good to go. So on Debian, and this is kind of nifty, you know, you still have to bring the interface up if it's not up, and then you type in DH client. What that seems to do is scan for open networks, or you can do an IW list to find out, you know, the networks that are around and stuff like that. But with this, what I did, I just DH client, and wouldn't you know, I'm getting some kind of notification about a chat or something. Don't they know that I'm recording? So it all pretty much works really well. At this point, I haven't really installed a whole lot on the system at this point still. For a few days I was just going without X. Then I installed Fluxbox at Ohio Linux Fest simply to, because I needed some features, you know, on the internets that were not available in something like Linux. So I installed Fluxbox. For whatever reason, Aptitude or apt-get, whichever one I used, I don't really remember. I think at that point I was using Aptitude. Whatever reason, that did not install X along with Fluxbox. So when I tried to launch Fluxbox, it wouldn't work. It couldn't connect to the X server. I wasn't sure why at first, and then I realized I had no X installed. So installed Zorg, X-O-R-G, of course, and started that first. That started, of course, to the gray screen with an X in the middle of it. And then I quit that. And then started Fluxbox again, and then it worked. The reason behind that, I'm pretty sure, is just that there were no xinit files. If I'd installed Zorg and then tried Fluxbox, it still wouldn't have worked because there was no xinit file, basically. So you'd have to make the .xinitrc, .xsession, .xclient, or whatever. Or at the very least, xinitrc, and you just put in exec space slash wherever x is stored, or rather fluxbox, wherever that is stored, and that becomes your default, you know, what you get when you start x. So that's the reason I did that. I just did it the easy way by, you know, starting x and then quitting and then starting fluxbox, simply because I didn't feel like typing out the xinitrc file. Lazy as that sounds. Let's see what else happens. Oh yeah, so after an update and after get update, the ACPI feature works fine. Previously, when I first booted, I couldn't get it. I mean, it was booting, but it would not boot all the way, and it would give an error about the computer temperature being like at absurd levels, and it was shutting down so that, you know, the laptop didn't burst into flames or something. So what you do in that case is you go to, you know, you boot up, go to Grub, you hit, you know, you select the image that you want to boot into, the line that you want to boot into, and then you hit E for edit, and then at the end of that line, you just add ACPI equals off, And then you hit enter, B, I think. Well, enter and then B for boot, I think. And it boots up with that feature turned off, the ACPI feature turned off. Now, I did an apt-get update afterwards, you know, now that I was in the system. Just become root, do an apt-get update, or aptitude update, maybe. I don't really... At the very first, I totally forgot about aptitude, and I was doing apt-get stuff. Oh, well, I know I'm not supposed to. Sorry. So you do an apt-get update, and that updated the whole system with all the latest, greatest, you know, modules and code and stuff. And every time, ever since then, ACPI has worked fantastic. I close the lid of the ASUS. It goes to sleep. I turn it on, or I open it back up, hit the space bar or whatever I want to hit, and it comes right back. The little blue buttons, the you know how the F keys have little blue secondary functions under them? Those work. So if you hit Fn, you know, F1, which has a little Z or a Z underneath it, it goes to sleep. Or the brightness and contrast. Or the sound, I guess. I don't know. Actually, I haven't installed ALSA yet. Things like that. So that's really cool. Dangerous thing is that the wireless card, the button for that works, FN, F2, that will turn off the wireless card. Getting it back on seems to be a huge pain. I don't know what it is. It's got to be some kind of bug. It will not turn right back on. I spent a good, you know, 3 hours trying to figure out what had gone wrong with that, trying to figure out what module I needed to reload or whatever. Very, very frustrating, very difficult. Problem is that in Fluxbox, if you've ever used it, it's, you know, you hit Alt F1 or Alt F2 or Alt F3 or F4, and that takes you to the different desktops. So I'm very used to reaching over there and hitting a meta key of some sort and then the F2 button, you know? And the problem is that my finger sometimes gets confused, and instead of hitting Alt, it'll hit Fn, and I'll turn off my wireless on accident. Really, really frustrating. So I'm going to look into just turning that feature off, actually. I mean, it's kind of that frustrating that I should really just protect myself from that. But ever since, I mean, otherwise everything else works. And the trick seems to be, and this is not confirmed yet, and frankly I'm afraid to try it too frequently right now, but you hit Fn, if you accidentally turn off the Wi-Fi card, try hitting Fn F1, which is the sleep key. Put it to sleep, and then bring it back to life using the Fn F2 key. And that seems to help, that the sleeping seems to help reset the Wi-Fi card. And I tried everything. Unplugged, took out the battery, tried to just let it sit for a while, you know, to let it get rid of all of its little non-volatile memory, whatever it's called. And it just would not come back on. So sleeping and then hitting, and either waking it up and immediately thereafter hitting that little FN F2 to bring on the Wi-Fi card, or trying to wake it up with that button, both of those seems to kind of work. But like I said, I'm hesitant to actually do too much trial and error with that right now, because this is the only computer I have on me right now. So that works. Oh, the networking is really actually really good. Like I said, it's DH client is all you type, searches for a network and signs you up. And it's actually really robust. I went, you know, I kept going from my hotel room, which had a Wi-Fi signal, down to the food court area, that had a Wi-Fi signal, down to a cafe, that had a Wi-Fi signal, back up to the hotel room, that had a Wi-Fi signal, you know, just I had no problem with it at all. It was really seamless. I was very, very happy with it. Let's see. I think that's about it for Debian. I mean, that's all I can think of. You know, I mean, it's all kind of what you'd expect from Debian. Now that I've figured out why it wasn't working initially, you could probably also just try installing it, you know, the whole package. But it's really fun and really cool to build up your own system. That's really what I was kind of looking for anyway. So I'm not going to go back and, like, install a larger package, I don't think, because I'm really quite happy with this bare-bones install, because it's just, it's taking up no space on the computer. It's really lightweight, and it's a lot of fun to play around with. One thing that I might try that Dave Yates was telling me about is the well, if you've ever seen Slitaz, Slitaz, it's a live CD for Linux, and it's really cool. It uses OpenBox, I think, and a panel up at the top or bottom, I forget, from LDXE or LXDE, LXDE. And it's a really attractive looking panel. When I saw it, I honestly thought it was from XFCE, but it's actually from this, that really lightweight one, the LXDE desktop. And it's functional, and it's kind of nice. So I might try that. Although I don't know, I kind of like the default Fluxbox configuration, to be honest. But you never know. That's about it. So yeah, Debian really nice on a triple E. It's really easy to install, especially now that I know what not to do. And I would give it a shot. Q. At this point, we probably just have like a coffee break. So if you can just kind of hear some of that wonderful music in your head and go get yourself a cup of coffee, then you could do that, because I'm feeling like a coffee break would be in order at this point. But like I say, I don't have any of my supplies, so we'll just have to make do without. Now I've got lots of, well, not lots of, but I have some feedback, some listener feedback. Oh, first, actually, I should mention that I have a site up online, and it's called unixporn.com. Now, that is not as scary as it sounds. Alternately, it's not as appealing as it sounds. It's Unix, not porn. But unixporn.com is just basically, see, I love screenshots. I can't get enough screenshots. Like when I'm bored, like at work or something, I will go to Google and I will just type in like Linux screenshots, and just look at people's desktops. Or I'll go to KDE Look or GNOME Look or whatever, and I'll look at their desktops. But what I really wanted was a place, like just one single place where you could go and browse around and look at other people's desktops. And that's all it was just desktop themes, not wallpapers for you, not anything, just desktops. This is what they're looking at all day. I just happened to like that. So that's what I did, and it worked. It's coming along pretty nicely. I am using a content manager called Goldmine, I think, or something like that, or Coppermine, or something like that. Golden Copper, I don't know. And it's just screenshots. You can click on them, and they'll blow up to full size. And it's just a whole bunch of different people submitting screenshots to me. Everyone's like, when I tell them, hey, why don't you send me a desktop? They're like, oh, but mine's so boring. It's just plain. It's regular. I don't care. It's not. It's we're not. It's not. The point is not to show off like how cool your desktop is. It's really just to show your desktop. Like this is what you're looking at all day. So send me a screenshot. Just email it to me. My email address, gort.klaatu@gmail.com. I will post it. If you want any comments specifically, then you can tell me what to say. But otherwise, I'll just comment on it myself, and I'm not mean or anything. Very, supportive. Or if I'm mean, it's, good-natured. But it's really cool. I have pictures of triple E PC desktops, and I'm gonna get mine up there pretty soon. Now that I have my triple E back in working order, I've got, GNOME, KDE, XFCE, just whatever, different distros, different looks, different functionality. A lot of cool stuff on there. So check that out. It's just for fun. It's not actually for any purpose or reason. It's really just for fun. So check that out, please. And if you feel so inclined that you wanna kind of doing the if you wanna just I lost the train of thought, and it's a one take thing, so I can't get back on track on that one. I was actually going to someone's email. So here, my friends, is a comment from some guy named Mark, and he has some pretty mean things to say. I think this is a guy. Yes, it is. This is good. So he says, thanks. Okay, so I listen to your Bad Apples show all the time. I think I may have emailed you one time or another about your website. I am totally baffled by it. Are you not interested in doing WordPress, or is this some kind of HTML experiment of yours? Love the show. Hate the site. And he says that the only reason he's so passionate about the subject is that he is a web developer, and he's kind of new to Linux. And he says, I'm in love with Linux and its quirks, and I love the websites, so I want you to be represented properly on the web. I think your show is great, blah, blah, blah. Let me know if you need any help on the site. Okay, so Mark, no, you didn't email me before. I've never heard that anyone hated my site. I actually never heard that anyone went to my site, much less that they liked it or disliked it. And for all of those who you don't know that I do have a site, it's thebadapples.info. And so if you want to check that out, you can. It's not, it's really just there because, well, I used to post wallpapers on there all the time. And then after a while, that got, like, a lot of work, you know, just designing wallpapers all every week. It just kind of got, I mean, how many wallpapers can you design, you know? It's just, it just gets a little bit tiresome after a while. Suddenly, you're, you know, here's one shade of gray, here's another shade of gray, or blue, whatever. So that was the reason for the existence of the site, I guess, and also, obviously, to house the feeds, the feed links. But, I mean, I gather that everyone's getting their information from other stuff, from other sites anyway, like Dan from the Linux Link tech show, you know, the linuxlink.net. He's got a big list of all the of a lot of the podcasts. MonsterBee.org has a whole list of them. Linux Podcast Planet, something or another has one. That was the one that Dave Yates and Link from TLTL Tilts started. So, I mean, there's other places that you can find my show, so I don't think that many people actually go to my site anyway. And the only reason I've got that site in all of its glorious, ugly HTML is because I'm all about glorious, ugly HTML. I like it. It's readable by humans and machines. It conveys the information, and that's what it is, and that's what I like. That's what I think the web really is all about. I know, this is treason. We all want Web 2.0. We all want the cloud, right? Well, I don't. I actually do not. I don't care about that stuff. I do not care. I want, I mean, I know that sometime in the future it'll all be a thin client for one big cloud, supposedly. But for me, for my money, some good old-fashioned plain text transmitted via, you know, FTP, HTTP, whatever, that works for me. So that's just that. That's how I feel. And that's why I'm doing it that way. Plus, if, you know, if I didn't have a pure, just ugly HTML site, I would never do anything in HTML. I would forget how to make a link. I don't know that much HTML as is, and barely any CSS, so I really need to have something so that I can at least do, you know, I can be posting some stuff just to keep me in practice. That's actually the real reason. And thanks for your offer for the help on the site. I will respectfully decline your offer, although that does not mean that I will never hit you up for help on something else. Because, you know, at some point I'm going to need help on some site that I actually want to look good and attractive and all Web 2.0-y and stuff like that. So thanks for the comments. And I spoke with him a couple of times, and he's a really nice guy, actually, Mark. And I totally take his his comments, you know, as lightly as I'm sure that he intended them. No problems. Now there's another guy here who emailed me, and for the life of me, I can't find. Here it is. This is the guy. So he says, this guy says, I had no idea that Blender could edit videos. And I know this. A lot of people say the same thing to me. If I had a dime for as many times as I heard that at Ohio Linux Fest, I would be able to buy a cup of coffee. And he says, I have tried a lot of the other video editors with Linux with limited success. My one hang-up when trying Blender was that if you don't set the playback frame rate to match the videos being added to Blender, the video plays too fast or slow, and the bar for audio isn't the same length as the video bar. Now, I check the frame rate, similar to how you described for exporting, but I use SM Player instead of VLC, and make the required change prior to adding the videos. I started listening to the Bad Apples after hearing your GIMP tutorials on Linux Reality. You do great tutorials. Hope you do more. And that's really great to hear as well. I'm glad that you're enjoying the tutorials because I know tutorials are sometimes kind of hard because, you know, you're listening maybe in the car on your way to work and you're like, oh, great, he's doing a tutorial. I am never going to remember all of this. I'm not in front of a computer. I guess the show is over. So I'm trying to keep the tutorials towards the end just so that if you're bored, you can stop, you know. But I do like tutorials. I think they're important. And frankly, they're one of my few contributions I feel like I can actually offer the community at this point. You know, as I've said, I'm still learning programming, and whether I ever do or not, you know, entirely to be seen, remains to be seen. But otherwise, I can at least sit down and say, well, I know how to do, you know, this, so I will help people also know how to do that. Because I know I love that. I love a good tutorial. So hopefully some of mine are helping people from time to time. In terms of the frame rate thing in Blender, well, number one, obviously that kind of thing will probably be finessed and smoothed over later on. But then the other thing is that among many, many hardcore video editors, and I kind of count myself among those, the deal is that they don't want any kind of auto correction kind of function in their application. The worst thing to ever happen, I think, certainly in Final Cut, you know, I mean, if you're talking about Final Cut workflow, and we're not, but the worst thing that happened to it was when, one of the many worst things to happen to it, was when they switched over to the latest version and they introduced, you know, the auto magical frame rate and frame resolution corrector. And this caused people to simply forget about, well, the technical origin of their footage, and they just figured, oh, the computer will fix it. No, the computer will not fix it. The computer will do something to it so that it looks okay to you, but maybe it's up converting it, or maybe it's down converting it, down resing it, or maybe it's transfer, you know, maybe it's changing its frame rate, and you have no, if you're not thinking about that, and if you don't go to great measure to prevent it from doing that, or if you press the wrong button when it says, hey, what do you want to do here, and you just say okay or whatever, then that's a problem, because you never know what you're really doing. You could be converting your video and then going about editing it. Why would you do that? That's not the idea. You want to keep everything native. So the awareness of that kind of thing is important. It's very significant. So frankly, you know, that's not a problem, basically, is what I'm trying to say. It's actually, it's okay. That was, you know, this is what I said to him in email, too, and I kind of went off just the same way, but oh well. The GIMP tutorials on the Linux Reality, if you haven't ever heard those, you should, or I guess it was just one, really, but I also did an Ardour tutorial on Linux Reality. So I imagine everyone listening to me at this point has heard that because I think that's how everyone found out about me. But and rightfully so, obviously a great show. And I was really happy to be to have gotten onto that show. You know, I didn't know it was going to end at episode 100. No one did. So, you know, taking a little time out to do a couple of tutorials to cover Chess's vacation time, man, that worked out, you know, because I got on just in time, so that was pretty fun and pretty neat. There was another email someone sent me about something, and I do not remember where or what it was. You know what it was? I know what it was, actually, now that I'm thinking about it. I know exactly what it was. Some guy, and I'm looking for the stupid message right now, because he just emailed me. Like, I don't know why I can't find it. He just emailed me back the other day. That's so bizarre. Well, what he did was he did a blog entry about SSH. And the really cool thing about this blog entry was that he had he had listened to my HPR, my Hacker Public Radio episode, about the about SSH. And really, unfortunately, it didn't work for him. So he tore me apart in the blog. No, actually, he was really nice in the blog entry. It was really, really nice. I really appreciated it. You know, no one likes to be bad-mouthed, you know, and I know how frustrating it is when you hear a tutorial and it doesn't work for you. I mean, that's really frustrating. I remember I used to get so angry at chess because, you know, I'd be following along with a tutorial, and he would skip over something, and it just happened to be the one thing out of the whole thing that I really didn't understand, and I'd be like, oh man, this isn't fair. Obviously, it's not a matter of the tutorial person. I mean, I'm not saying this is an excuse to myself, but, you know, it's a combination, and this is what he was kind of saying in the blog, too. It's a combination of the tutorial person not knowing exactly the audience that's going to be reading it, and the person reading it not knowing exactly, you know, everything in the world that they need to know. And that's just kind of how it works out sometimes, unfortunately. But, you know, I mean, I think that it's kind of helpful anyway, you know, and a lot of times it sends you off in the right direction. So I commented on his blog. His name was David. I finally found the email. His name was David, and he actually just recently made another entry, and I haven't read it yet. So maybe he got it working, I hope. But, yeah, I mean, you know, SSHing is, you know, in theory, like, if you think about it, it's easy. And then in reality, because there are so many variables involved, it's kind of tough. And the thing to do anytime you're troubleshooting is to eliminate variables. That's the goal. So, see, this is like a little tutorial right now. Boy, we should have segue music. Oh, yeah, I forgot. We don't have any. So this is, you know, I mean, troubleshooting. You want to eliminate variables, you know. This isn't working. Okay, well, why not? So in his case, especially, he's got two computers, and he's trying to, you know, he sets up the dynamic DNS up in the sky, and he tries to SSH in, and he just can't, and he goes back, you know. Well, the first thing you want to do is, because already you've got two computers plus the DNS name, the dynamic DNS forwarding thing. Okay, well, that's three different things that you have to worry about, right? Well, look at it even closer. So he's SSHing in from his work, right? Let's assume. I don't actually remember if it was from work, but let's say he is. Now you've got the firewall in front of that computer that he's sitting at. You got the dynamic DNS. Or you got the computer that he's sitting at, so that's two things. You got the dynamic DNS. Then you have a firewall at home, and then you've got your computer. That's five variables now. Where in that equation is it not working? Oh, well, what about if he's got a modem and a router in front of his computer at home? Well, that's another variable now, you know. Just so many different variables there. So the first thing to do, if something's not working, eliminate everything. Like, what do you really need to SSH? You need two computers that are somehow talking to each other very directly. So take two computers, tether them together with a Cat5 cable. They're now networked, right? Make sure that they have a self-assigned IP of some sort. You can assign it yourself if you want with, like, ifconfig. And now you're on a network. You have a two-computer local area network. There's no internet involved. That's a good thing because the internet equals variable. So now see if you can SSH into your other computer, you know. Can you do it? Well, that means if it works, that means that computer is configured correctly, all right? So now, and if it doesn't work, then you know the problem isn't with anything else except that one computer. Maybe the SSH daemon isn't running, or maybe the firewall settings on that computer, that's another variable, it's not allowing port 22 or whatever port you're assigning to do SSH on, which you should, by the way, reassign from 22. Maybe it's not letting that through. So check that as well. So finally, when you finally get it to work, you finally are SSHing from one computer to the other over a hard wire, then you know it works, and now you can introduce a new variable. And that the most logical new variable would be your wireless router. So now, again, outside of the internet, just all you're doing is you're now creating a wireless network. So now you point one computer to the router, the other computer at the router. They both have IP addresses on that little wireless network. Try it again. SSH. Doesn't work? Something's wrong with the router. If it does work, step back one more thing. Now what you're going to do is you're going to want to go out onto the internet and SSH into your computer. That'll be a little bit tougher because you have to get another signal, you know, so that you're actually on the internet. So what you might want to, if possible, you know, go hardwired into, you know, straight into an internet jack somewhere, and then wireless to your computer or whatever. Point is that you want to actually exit your network and then come back in. And if that works, then you can really go for it. Go out to work or wherever you're wanting to SSH from, typically. Try it. If it doesn't work, now you know something's up with the computer set up at that location. And whether you can fix that or not depends on a lot of different things. There are ways to get around that. I don't know enough about it, honestly. You know, you might have to like do a proxy kind of setup where you're SSHing out of a certain port and going into another one or something like that. Or you have to assign the SSH port to a certain port that your work firewall wouldn't see any problem with, stuff like that. But don't ask me about that stuff, man, because, oh boy, that's complex stuff. So thanks for the feedback, everyone, all three of yous. And I'm sure there were some others, but not really about this particular show, and I'm not going to just keep rambling on. I'm pretty sure that I've gone on for a pretty long time at this point. Yeah, fun stuff, man. It's good stuff. Linux, I like it. I think that's all I had planned for this episode. So, you know, again, just big howdy to everyone who I met at OLF. A lot of people, I recognized your names from IRC, and a lot of people I just, you know, were totally brand new people to me. It was really cool. Really, you know, I think an event like that is really fun. It's really neat to make personal contact because the internet, you know, I mean, it's pretty nifty, but after a while, it's just kind of like we're all not even really in existence, but we actually are because we saw each other and had a lot of fun and stuff. So there you go. That's the Bad Apples, episode 9, season 3, straight from more or less Ohio Linux Fest. And if you didn't go this year, try to make it out next year. Or not. Doesn't really matter. If you need to email, it's gort.klaatu@gmail.com. On IRC, honestly, the best way to find me these days is just pound Linux Cranks. So irc.freenode.net, pound Linux Cranks would be the channel. You can also, you know, look and pound podcast, pound a lot of Linux links. I'm hanging out in Dave Yates' channel just because it's a cool channel. So there you go. That's how to find me. Thanks.